So I was asked to chant this Hanuman song, right? That's what I was asked to do. And of course, tonight we're going to speak about Ramanujacharya rather than the Ramayana tonight. So. Oops, it's off tune.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. That was fun. So should we talk about Ramanujacharya now? Okay. Let me get my outline out. So, of course, Ramanujacharya, so Om Gana Timananda Shah, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So as everybody knows, there are four Vaishnava Sampradayas. In each one of those Sampradayas, there are personalities who headed up the Sampradaya. And there's the Lakshmi Sampradaya, which Ramanujacharya is the main acharya in the modern day of. Then there is the Kumara Sampradaya, which has the four Kumaras. Then there is the Rudra Sampradaya, which is headed up by Lord Rudra, Lord Shiva. And then finally, there's the Brahma Sampradaya, and we're members of the Brahma Sampradaya. Actually, a particular branch of the Brahma Sampradaya known as the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And in this particular Sampradaya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose to appear. So we are very fortunate. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented us with the philosophy, Haribol, Vachincha Beda Abeda Tatwa, which is a very interesting philosophy. We're not going to be too philosophical tonight, don't worry. Mostly I'm going to try to tell stories. So, Chincha Beda Abeda Tatwa, Abeda Abeda Tatwa means something, or the absolute truth, is one and different from everything simultaneously inconceivably. And that's the philosophy we follow, which means that everything in one sense is God and everything in another sense is different from God. So what that means is everything is God because it is God's. It belongs to God and comes from God, as Krishna says in the Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate, right? Or also Om Purnamadam. That everything, the Supreme Personality of God, is perfect and complete, and all the emanations that come from him are perfectly complete in and of themselves, as is Upanishad. So, in other words, everything belongs to Krishna, everything emanates from Krishna, everything is controlled by Krishna, everything is used for Krishna's purpose, all of Krishna's energies are first-class servants. So in this way, everything can be considered to be Krishna, but also everything can be considered to be, in one sense, different than Krishna, simultaneously. In other words, and that even ourselves, we are jiva souls, as Krishna says in the Gita. Mami vamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are Krishna's parts and parcels. So in one sense, we are the same as Krishna, the same quality. And in another sense, we're different than Krishna. So this is the Chincha Beda Beda Tattva philosophy which pervades the understanding of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So, Ramanujacharya, getting back to Ramanujacharya, he actually taught the Vishishta Dvaita philosophy, which means purified monism, which is basically the same as the Chincha Beda Beda Tattva. Of all the different teachings of the Acharyas, including the teaching of in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, Madhvacharya, the Vishishta Dvaita philosophy taught by Ramanujacharya is most similar to our philosophy. Whereas Brahma Sampradaya, the Madhvacharya branch of the Brahma Sampradaya, there's simply the conception of Dvaita. There's not too much conception of the Lord being present in his energy, but his energy is separate from him. So there's a separation between the Lord and his energy, whereas in reality, Parasya Shaktivya Vidaiva Shugate Subhavaki Gyana Balakriyatcha, which means the Lord, in one sense, is his energy, the Lord, in one sense, is not his energy, but he is present in his energy, if that makes sense to everybody. So Ramanujacharya taught that, and so he's considered the primary acharya of the Lakshmi Sampradaya or Sri Sampradaya, and is primarily headquarters. He has two primary headquarters. One is in Sri Rangam, And the other one is in Kanchipuram, which are both in South India. So Srirangam is where Lord Ranganath is worshipped, and that's the place where Ramanujacharya left this world, and if one goes to Srirangam, you can actually see Ramanujacharya's body, which is preserved. It's wrapped in sort of a cloth, and he's sitting there. The body is actually there, and he's sitting like a sannyasi, you know, straight back with his danda like that. And that's in the temple. For those of you, I don't know if anyone's here, of course, Rasa Bihari's been in the temple. Someone else? Yeah, you've been there. And so you've seen the deity, the form of Ramanujacharya. And there's actually a deity of him, too, right in front of his body, his transcendental body. And that's the deity that Ramanujacharya breathed on to, let's say, invoke his presence or to instill his presence in the form of the deity. In other words, Ramanujacharya actually installed his own deity before he left this world. So, anyway, so now we're going to tell some stories about Ramanujacharya. Of course, previous to Ramanujacharya, you had the guru named Yamunacharya, famous guru in South India. And I'm not going to tell the story about Yamunacharya because it is a very interesting story, because Yamunacharya, in brief, previously got very attached. He became the king because he had won an argument on behalf of his guru. I'm not going to get into the details. When his grandfather sent someone to preach to him, he realized that what he was doing was a waste of his spiritual time, and he just left the kingdom. And he became the great personality who was in charge of Srirangam. So that's Yamunacharya. So, but as far as Ramanujacharya is concerned, he was given the name Ramanujacharya precisely because he was considered to be an incarnation of Lakshman. It's connected, of course, to the Ramayana story, where you have Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna. And so he's considered an incarnation of Lakshman. And when he was very young, he, of course, manifested his spiritual qualities being Lakshman. And he would associate with anyone who was a Vaishnava, even if they weren't born in a Brahmin family. Now, if we try to understand the scenario at that particular time, that is, was the situation in Srirangam, and even today, and in Kanchi, even today, they're very much separated according to their varnas. And there's a lot of discrimination the Brahmanas have against everyone else, especially against those who are the Shudra Varna. Like, if you go to Srirangam, there's the deity in the center, of course. And then around in the housing area around the temple, the first housing area, which is like circular, or it's like a square actually, but it's around the temple, that's where the Brahmins live. And then the next housing area, you got the Kshatriyas. The next housing area, you know, like concentric circles, but it's not a circle, concentric squares, I guess you would say, if you can use that word for squares. So then you have the Vaishyas, and then finally you have the Shudras. So there's a lot of discrimination. And even to this day, there are many followers of Ramanujacharya who don't let people who are not born in Brahmin families chant the main mantra, which is Om Namo Narayanaya, which Ramanujacharya, as we'll hear about in a few minutes, he wanted everyone to chant that mantra. But because these ritualistic Brahmanas who profess to be followers of Ramanujacharya are so proud of their position, there's actually the one group of followers like this, they say that if you're not born in the Brahmin family, you can't even say Om. Not allowed to say Om. Oh, I said Om. So anyway, what to speak of the Gayatri Mantra? You know, the Brahma Gayatri Mantra, You're certainly not allowed to even touch that. You're not probably not allowed to say a lot of the verses from the Bhagavatam, like Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So even the followers of Ramanujacharya deviated from his teachings to a large, many of the followers, not all the followers, because there's a group that actually do follow him. And they do allow everyone to chant Om. But there was a lot of discrimination according to caste then. And even today, like I said, even today, and actually all over India. I do a lot of work in Vrindavan. And there's Brajavasis who are not allowed to go in the temples there. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? People are born in Vrindavan. But because of their caste, if they try to go into any of the temples, like the Goswami temples, they're not allowed to go into the temples. Can you imagine that? Brajavasis, they're eternal associates of Krishna because they're born in Braj. Yet because of their so-called caste and their birth, they're not allowed in the temple. And so we're actually working with many of them in some of our projects at Radha Kund and around Govardhan. We have a project to clean up Govardhan. We have people regularly going out. We hire a lot of these Brajavasis. It's one of my projects. And we also take care of many areas at Radha Kund. In fact, we've been given possession of the Madan Mohan Temple in Radha Kund. I don't know if you knew that. We actually have that as a place, as our base right now. And it looks like we may buy it eventually. It's a very important temple. You been to that temple? Oh yeah, you went with me. Have you been? Madan Mohan Temple. Because at Radha Kund, you have replicas of the Vrindavan temples. So there's Madan Mohan Temple, Radha Govinda Temple, Radha Giridhari Temple. Of course, you know about that one. So, anyway, getting back to the point. So, Ramanujacharya, being very equal poised, he associated with any Vaishnava regardless of the caste. So, he had this one Vaishnava that he associated with, whose name was Kanchi Purna, who was a non-Brahman disciple of Yamunacharya. So this, of course, caused a lot of consternation for the wife of Ramanujacharya, because Ramanujacharya's wife was from a very strict Brahmin family. And later on, that's what caused Ramanujacharya to take sannyas, because his wife was offensive to devotees who were not Brahmins. And Ramanujacharya left, but we're going to tell that story in a second. So when Ramanujacharya was very young, his father passed away, and he married at 16 years. He didn't have a mobile phone either. So he got married at 16 years of age. And he had a guru. And his guru's name was Yadava Prakash. And his guru was an impersonalist, someone who didn't believe that the Absolute Truth was personal, but followed Shankaracharya. And Shankaracharya, of course, is Lord Shiva, and he came with the mission to bring people back to the Vedic literatures after Buddha had taken people away from the Vedic literatures. So in order to do that, he taught something called covered Buddhism. In other words, impersonalism is not exactly the same as Buddhism, because Buddhism is nihilism and voidism, where he taught that actually everything is one. There's no variety in the absolute. And there's some faults in his philosophy. I'll delineate them in a second, right now actually. He taught that there's Brahman, and the word Brahman means the greatest. And the greatest fell into illusion. And there's the illusion who put the greatest into illusion. And the greatest is thinking that I am me, you are you, and we're all this variety here, this is all illusion that we're sitting here, but actually we're all just like indifferentiated Brahman. We're like the white light or something like that. That's basically his philosophy. But the fault in his philosophy was that if you say that Brahman was put into illusion, then illusion becomes more powerful than Brahman, which contradicts the fact that Brahman is Brahman, because the word Brahman means the greatest. And if something that's the greatest is put into illusion by something else, that something else is the greatest. So that's the main fault in his philosophy. So anyway, so Ramanujacharya was a personalist, not an impersonalist. But his guru was an impersonalist. And one time his guru, as Ramanujacharya was massaging his guru, was commenting on the Chandogya Upanishad. In the Chandogya Upanishad, there's a description of the Lord's eyes, the reddish eyes of the Lord, because Krishna's eyes sometimes are reddish like that. And his guru interpreted that description as the Lord's eyes are as reddish, are as reddish as the hind part of a monkey, which is actually quite offensive. So Ramanujacharya was massaging his guru at that time, and he started to cry, hearing the offenses against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when he started to cry, the tears hit his guru's back. And the guru said, what's your problem? And he said, you're wrong, Guru Dev. Don't try that at home. That's quite dangerous. You're wrong, Guru Dev. The Guru said, I'm wrong? What is your explanation, my dear disciple? And so he described that the Lord's eyes are as red as a lotus flower, which blooms in the sun. Anyway, there's a whole description in Sanskrit you can analyze in different ways like that. And so the guru got really angry. Oh, I think she knows better than me. And another time, he actually challenged his guru by saying exactly what I said before, that Brahman can never be put under illusion. So the guru got really angry at him. And you know what you do with disciples who you don't want anymore. You kill them. So I don't usually do that. I don't think I've done it yet. Anyway, so, but he had a good way. He had a really interesting way that to kill his disciple. Because if you kill your disciple, that's karma, bad karma, right? Nobody likes bad karma. So he thought, let's kill Ramanuja, but let's take him to the Ganges, you know, go on a trip to the Ganges. Take him to the Ganges and kill him near the Ganges, and then we can just take a bath in the Ganges. Wow, that's a good way not to have karma, right? And just like every morning when we worship Tulsi Devi, what do we chant? Yani kani chapapani ramahachari kani cha tani tani upanishanti panachina pade pade. That by circumambulating Tulsi Devi, you can become free from the karma of killing a Brahmin. So for those of you who want to do things, get yourself a Tulsi Devi and circumambulate all the time, right? That's pretty nice. You can do anything you want.
There's a big one out there.
You can take Kaaba, you can do all sorts of things, and you don't have to worry. Just yani kani chapapani. It doesn't work like that. Because if you do that deliberately, it doesn't work. So he told his disciples, the guru, Yadava Prakash, he told his disciples that let's all go to the Ganges, go on a pilgrimage trip. So they all went to the Ganges with the idea, whoops, the natives are restless. They all went to the Ganges with the idea of killing Yamunacharya. Of course, it was Yamuna there. And not Yamunacharya, I mean Ramanuja. Ramanuja. With killing Ramanuja. So, but Ramanuja's cousin, Govinda, overheard what had happened, overheard their plan. Okay. That's all right. They don't bother me too much. Overheard their plan, and he informed Ramanuja, and Ramanuja escaped in the middle of the night and was able to, like, go through the forest. And it's described that Lord Narayan and his wife appeared as a couple, a fowler couple. I mean, as a couple that takes care of birds or captures birds in the forest, and guided Ramanujacharya, or Ramanuja, back to Kanchi. So Ramanuja was back in Kanchi. The guru comes back with his disciples, thinking that Ramanuja has died anyway. We didn't have to kill him. We got away with it. And he finds Ramanuja there, and he's really angry still with Ramanuja. Then another thing happens that really makes the guru even angrier. The king of Kanchi has a daughter, and the daughter is being haunted by a ghost who's a Brahma Rakshasa, like Ravan. And he's very worried, and he calls for Yadava Prakash, the guru of Ramanuja, and he says, get rid of this ghost. And the guru goes to this girl, and he chants some mantras or whatever he does, and the ghost starts to laugh at him. He says, this is hopeless. The ghost actually starts to laugh. Through the mouth of the girl. He says, like, you're hopeless. The only way that I'm going to leave this body is if your disciple Ramanuja comes. And this is really upsetting for the guru. So Ramanujacharya just goes and chants the holy name, and this ghost goes away. And signifies this by knocking down a tree that's nearby. And then the guru is just like really fried at this time, and basically he rejects Ramanuja. He says, you're not my disciple anymore. Okay, thank you, Guru Maharaj. So, but Ramanuja at the same time, you know, he's married there, and he's serving this non-Brahman disciple of Yamunacharya, who's Kanchi Purna. So he's serving him, serving him, serving him. And Ramanuja's wife is really upset. We're born in a Brahmin family, and you're serving the Shudra, and what's going to happen? So later on, you'll hear what happens. In the meantime, Yamunacharya, who is in Srirangam, is very sick and gets ready to leave this world, and calls for Ramanuja to see him, because he knows that Ramanuja is going to be the next Acharya. So Ramanuja, upon hearing this, runs, or goes very quickly, to Srirangam, and he sees Yamunacharya has just left his body, and he's lying on his back with a clenched fist. You know, his fist is like this. And none of the disciples know why Guru Maharaj has his fist clenched. They're thinking, what's happening? And Ramanuja knows. And he says, there's three things that Yamunacharya did not or did not have time to accomplish during his pastimes. One was to teach people in general about Krishna consciousness. And then the fist opened, started open up, one finger opened, came up. And the second was to teach, to write a commentary on the Vedanta that everybody could understand. And the third one was to name a disciple after Parashara Muni. So all three fingers, you know, I had three, whatever, opened up like that. And the disciples at that point of Yamunacharya understood that Ramanuja was going to be the next Acharya. But he wasn't ready to do that right now. But he returned to Kanchi completely He returned to Kanchi completely disinterested in the material world, because that didn't please his wife too much. So what happened with Ramanuja's wife is, one time Ramanuja invited his non-Brahman Siksha Guru to come and take prasadam, Kanchi Purna, to come take prasadam at his house. So this non-Brahman disciple of Yamunacharya came to Ramanuja's house, but he came early. And he asked Ramanuja's wife, you know, can I have some prasad? And Ramanuja's wife served him prasad. And after she served him prasad, she thought, oh, his remnants are contaminated. So she cleaned up the place, put cow manure everywhere, and basically fed the remnants either to a dog or to just shudras. And so Ramanuja comes back and says, what happened to my guru, you know, siksha guru? And his wife says, I fed him, and Ramanuja said, where are the remnants? And she said, no, they're impure. You know, guru's remnants impure. And I just fed them to the dogs and other shudras. And Ramanuja gets really angry with his wife. You know, he's ready almost to leave at this point. It's time for a divorce, basically. And then, well, worse than a divorce, anyway. So then another thing happens is that Ramanujacharya's wife is drawing water from a well, you know, with a bucket and everything like that. At the same time, Kanchipurna, you know, the non-Brahmin disciple of Yamunacharya, he has his wife, and his wife is drawing water from the well. And Kanchipurna's wife's water happens to trickle into the bucket which Ramanujacharya's wife is using to draw water from the well. And Ramanujacharya's wife goes, ooh, shudra water! Ooh, my water's again. She just throws her water back in the well. And then Kanchipurna's wife gets so upset, she tells her husband, and they both leave town. And Ramanujacharya hears this, and he thinks, it's time to leave. So he has a really interesting trick. None of you men should try this. he finds a Brahmin. And in those days, Brahmins were used to carry messages. And he tells Brahmin, here's a note from my wife's mother that there's a marriage in the village. And you have to come immediately. So this Brahmin, you know, goes to Ramanujacharya's wife and brings the message, your mother is calling you to the village. You have to come immediately. And Ramanuja's sitting there just like he's innocent, doesn't know anything about it. He says, my dear, well, what's that note about? And she says, I have to go to this marriage. And you should come too, honey. Or whatever they call each other at that time. Priya? No, the wife didn't call the husband Priya. No.
Swami.
Swami. I said, you should come too, Swami. And he said, I'm coming, just you go first. And I'll follow very shortly after that. And she says, okay. And she leaves, and then as soon as she goes around the corner, Ramanuja takes sannyas. You know, this is unusual. I don't suggest this is an example for anybody to do. But he took sannyas, actually. He found a disciple of Yamunacharya and took sannyas from a disciple of Yamunacharya. And he basically got the name at that point, Yati Raj. Yati Raj means the king of sannyasis. Yati Raj. Ramanujacharya. And first thing he did is, as soon as he took sannyas, he initiated his cousin, whose name was Dasarathi. And then he initiated another person named Kuresh. And this Kuresh, his disciple, had a photographic memory. He could remember everything upon seeing it or hearing it one time. He was like the scribe for Ramanujacharya. So Kuresh preached to Ramanujacharya's impersonalist guru, Yadava Prakash. He said, you should surrender to your disciple. That's pretty difficult, isn't it? Surrender to your disciple. I don't know if I could do that. So, and then also Yadava Prakash, his mother preached to him also. that you should surrender to your disciple. And then he had a dream in which Krishna was telling him, surrender to your disciple. And finally, he went before his disciple and said, all right, let's have an argument. You know, you have to prove that you're right. You know, it wasn't enough to have Krishna, his mother, and Koresh preach to him. But it had to be by argumentation. And actually, that was the standard in those days. The standard in those days is that you would have a discussion, an argument with someone, and if you were defeated, you had to surrender to that person, become his disciple. That was, you know, a very intellectual type of confrontation. So Yadava Prakash was defeated by Ramanujacharya, and he became one of Ramanujacharya's chief disciples at that point. His name became Govinda Jihar. So then Ramanujacharya decided, let me leave Kanchipuram, that is, you know, the city of Kanchi, and then go to Srirangam to actually associate with other disciples of Yamunacharya. So he went there, and then he studied under one of his main gurus there, was named Mahapurna in Srirangam. And so Mahapurna sent him to another disciple of Yamunacharya named Goshtipurna, who was supposed to give Ramanujacharya a special mantra that if anyone chanted, they become liberated immediately. And Ramanujacharya begged for the mantra many, many times. He went to the guru, and the guru said, I'm not going to give you the mantra, you're not qualified. So he went again and again and again. Finally, his guru, Goshtipurna, said, I'll give you the mantra, but you have to keep it secret. It's a secret mantra. Because if anyone hears it, they will become liberated. And so what happened? He said, yes, Guru Maharaj, I will listen to your instructions. So he got this mantra, and the mantra is Om Namo Narayanaya, like that. And so he immediately, after getting the mantra, he goes up to the tallest building in the city and says to everybody, everybody chant this mantra after me. Om Namo Narayanaya. And he initiates the whole village, you know, basically speaking. And as I mentioned it earlier, that even some of his disciples or followers nowadays, they will not allow that mantra to be heard by those who are not Brahmins, or chanted by those who are not Brahmins or born in Brahmin families. But he was like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just opening up, you know, social reform, opening up Krishna consciousness, spirituality for everybody. And the Brahmanas, they want to keep their mantras or their rites in a very exclusive way. Why is that? Because that way they make more money. Because if you know the law of supply and demand, if you can keep the supply really low and the demand is good, then the price goes up. Just like nowadays, probably all you know, the cars cost more than they did 6 months ago. Because they can't produce so many cars because of the shortage of chips and everything like that. And, you know, raw materials because of the COVID, basically because of COVID in China and everything like that. And so the price of cars has gone astronomically higher, at least in America, probably here too, right? And New Zealand too. Because you keep the supply down, prices go up. Like doctors, you keep the doctors, amount of doctors really slow. And then the doctors charge more and more and more. And more. Like if you want to get dentures. How much does it cost to get dentures?
Full denture?
Yeah.
$2,500?
That's not bad. I'll take you up on that one. So, you know, you make money. He was talking to me about a machine. Srinathar was talking about a machine that you can actually make dentures. It scans your mouth and makes your dentures. If everybody had the machine, you'd be out of business, right? or if anyone is allowed to use the machine, then any store could buy the machine and make dentures. So when you keep the supply down, you have to be authorized, then you can actually make a lot more money. Charge what's called the market rate or something. So the brahmanas, they actually want to make money. And so, because everybody in India needs a brahmin. If you want to be born, you need a brahmin. To do the safe delivery thing, you know, samskara, isn't it? And then namakarana, and then, you know, everything. Or if you want to die, you need a brahmin. You can't die without a brahmin. Right? Not jyeshti. Can you imagine that? I want to die. No. How much do you charge for death? $500. No, I can't afford to die. You know, there's some scars. It's like that. And sometimes even in some ISKCON temples, they have a price list for different samskaras. Isn't it? You ever seen that? Which is not Brahman. Brahman doesn't have a price list for anything. A Brahman should do everything for free, and if someone wants to give a donation, that's up to them. Everything for free. Brahman just gives. He gives and gives. You know, he doesn't care whether someone is rich or someone is poor. He'll still do the namakarana for the baby. That reminds me of the story of Vishishta Muni and Maharaj Nimi. Once upon a time, there was this Maharaj Nimi. This is actually part of the Ramayana story. It was really interesting. Maharaj Nimi, he wanted to do a Vaishnava sacrifice, and he called for his guru, Vishishta Muni. Please come and do it for me. And Vishishta Muni said, no, I have another appointment with the demigods and they pay more. He didn't say that, but that's what. So he goes to the heavenly planets, and as you know, in the heavenly planets, time is experienced differently than on the earth planet. So it comes a long time, and Maharaj Nimi is thinking, I definitely, what's that, the children again? That's all right, they're not bothering me. He's thinking, I definitely wanted to do the sacrifice, but Guru Maharaj isn't here. He told me to wait. But sacrifice is more important. Human life is very short. So let me do the sacrifice. I'm sure Guru Maharaj won't mind if I chant a little Hare Krishna while he's gone. Like if your guru said, don't chant your rounds until I come back. And he's gone for a few days. You know, it's not a very good idea. And then you chant your rounds and he comes back. He says, you chant your rounds without my permission. So anyway, so Maharaj Nimi did this sacrifice without his guru's permission. He didn't wait till his guru came back. The guru comes back and says, you did it without my permission. And the guru says, therefore, you should die. Near Deha, you should become without body. And then he says, Guru Maharaj, I have some dakshin for you. You should become near Deha too. So they both die. Interesting story. No, there's more to the story than that. And Vishishta Muni later took birth from the semen of Mitra and Varuna. But then Maharaj Nimi, his body is preserved in oil. The Brahmanas preserved his body in oil because the sacrifice is still going on. And so the sacrifice ends, and the demigods come down, and the demigods say to the Brahmins, what do you want? And they say, we want Maharaj Nimi to come back to life. So they say, okay, he can come back to life. Maharaj Nimi comes back to life, says, I don't want to come back to life. I want to go back to Godhead. And so he goes back in the oil, the body goes back in the oil. And the Brahmanas, they need a king. So what they do is they churn the body of Maharaj Nimi, some sort of genetic engineering, isn't it? Cloning? Something like that. Very sophisticated. Actually, in those days, it's not that they were just like primitive people. They could do the same thing or more than the scientists can do today, but through mantras and other different procedures. So they churned the body of Maharaj Nimi and they got a king. And his name was Janaka the First. And so there was a whole line of kings, just like you have in England, you have King Edward the First, King Edward the Second, you know, the Third, Fourth. Of course, everybody knows about Henry the Eighth. That's a different story. So they had. So anyway, they churned the body, and they got this king, Janaka I. So therefore, Sita's father was one of the Janakas in the line. The first, second, I'm not sure which one, but he was one of them. Do you remember which one? No. He's one of the Janakas in the line. So very, 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 very sophisticated. So anyway, so they're talking about Brahmins. So Brahmins, in many cases, they are very greedy. Not all of them. Please, there are a lot of nice Brahmins. But in Kali Yuga, many demons take birth in Brahmin families. Previous Yuga, the demons took birth in Kshatriya families. That's why Krishna had to come down to the earth planet and Prithvinaya said, "Anam Vinashaya Chadushkuntam," and arranged for all the Kshatriyas to come together in the battle of Kurukshetra and be killed simultaneously. And he killed a lot of other ones before that, you know, Jarasandha and other interesting personalities like that. So, anyway, so getting back to this whole story, is that with the Guru did not want the mantra revealed, and Ramanujacharya revealed the mantra to everybody. And then the Guru comes out really angry at his disciple, and he says, "You're going to hell. You disobeyed my order." It's one of the 10 offenses in chanting. Disobeyed the order of the spiritual master. And so Ramanujacharya says, "Okay, I'm willing to go to hell. I just want everyone to get liberated." And then his guru, Goshtipurna, he says to him, "You are better than me. You are actually my guru." And he bows down to the feet of his disciple, his initiated disciple, and says, "Because you've actually understood Krishna consciousness and compassion." Because that's one of the hallmarks of a devotee. We were talking today about Vaishnava principles, and we haven't been talking about the four regulated principles, but one principle of Vaishnavism is compassion and love for all living entities. It's a principle, it's not simply detail. We have details in Krishna consciousness, such as the way we dress, you know, the type of tilak we wear, etc., like that, you know, how many strands of neck beads we have around our neck. I mean, these are details because actually previously people were not initiated, were not allowed to wear neck beads. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not wear neck beads before he took initiation. So these are just details. But as far as principles of devotional service, an essential principle is compassion and empathy for other living entities, even children. So Ramanujacharya actually became the guru of his guru. Then he began to travel all over, and he was interested in helping with the temples all over India and regulating the deity worship in many of the temples. So one of the temples he went to was in Jagannath Puri, Lord Jagannath's temple. And he saw that the devotees there, they were really loose. You know, as far as the time and everything, they were really like on the spontaneous platform. And even Prabhupada says sometimes the pujaris will smoke bidis or something like that, you know, like the Indian type of cigarettes. So, but they were on the spontaneous platform. And so when Ramanujacharya tried to interfere with their spontaneous devotional service, Lord Jagannath got angry with him. And he threw him through the air to Kurukshetra, which is where Lord Kurmadev is worshipped, Kurukshetra. And Ramanujacharya thought it wasn't a Vishnu temple, thought it was a Shiva temple. He began to fast, but then he realized it was a Vishnu temple, the Kurma avatar. And so, very, very wonderful story. And then he also wrote the Sribhasha, which is the Vedanta commentary by the Sri Vaishnavas, or Ramanuja's commentary on the Vedanta. Then another interesting story was that once upon a time, the king of Chola, who was a Shiva worshipper, wanted everyone to worship Shiva and not to worship Krishna, and not to worship Vishnu. So he understood that Ramanujacharya was one of the main acharyas, so he had to convert Ramanujacharya by force. So he asked to see Ramanujacharya, and everybody knew what was going to happen. So Ramanujacharya had his disciples, especially one disciple, named Quraysh, who we mentioned before, dress up as him in a sannyas robe so that everyone thought that he was Ramanujacharya. So Quraysh goes before the king, and the king says, give up worship of Vishnu, just worship Lord Shiva. And Quraysh says, no, basically. And the king says, all right, put his eyes out. And they struck Quraysh's eyes out. He became blinded at that particular point. But don't worry, there's a happy ending to this thing. The king then developed cancer of the throat. And so he became known as King Krimikanta. That means someone who has a warm throat. Or it was cancer. It was actually cancer. And later on, the king died from the cancer. And at the same time, Quraysh, he was blinded. So Ramanujacharya, when he heard this, he told Quraysh to go to the temple of Radha-Dharaja in Kanchi and ask for his eyes back. And so Quraysh goes into the temple of Radha-Dharaja, and he doesn't ask for his eyes back, he asks for the king to be forgiven. That's another quality of a Vaishnava. Can you imagine if someone put your eyes out? You'd probably just want vengeance your whole life. We see this sometimes. When people have been offended in some way or hurt in some way, they just want vengeance to get even, to make, it gives them happiness to make the other person suffer, doesn't it? Ah, you offended me, Krishna's punishing you. So that's not Vaishnava, like Haridas Thakur was not like that, or Jesus Christ was not like that. We do not find any pure devotee of the Lord who is vengeful at all, wanting to see others suffer, no matter what the person does to them. Or Lord, what to speak of Lord Nityananda? Lord Nityananda wanted to save Madai, who had actually hit him on the head. Can you imagine if someone hit you on the head, you said, please, chant Hare Krishna, become a devotee. That is really elevated. So anyway, so Ramanujacharya, when he heard this, he said to Quraysh, actually, don't you understand your eyes belong to me? I'm your guru. You're supposed to use them to serve me. So go back to the deities and ask for your eyes back. Because Quraysh was thinking, I'm just making a selfish request. The first time he was thinking, I'm making a selfish request, asking for something for myself. You know, generally we go before the deities and ask for something for ourselves. You know, we have good health, a lot of money, right? Or the ladies do kachiyani, brat. You get a good husband, right? So, but he was completely selfless. So, but when he was ordered to do so by Ramanujacharya, he went before the deity and asked, he said, he didn't even ask for my eyes back. He says, two of the possessions of my master have been taken away. In other words, he understood. This is real devotional service, to understand that whatever you have, manasa deha geya yoka shimor, arpilam tuya padi nanda kishore, whatever I have, my mind, my body, my words, my home, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. Whatever I have is yours, Nanda Kishore. Instead, we're thinking, this is my home, my body, my car, mine, I and mine, also done. Ishwaroham ahambhavi, siddhoham are the ones. I am perfect, I am powerful, I am happy. I'm a demon. That's from the chapter Divine and Demoniac Nature in the Bhagavad Gita. So he asked for his eyes back, and then he walked out of the temple, fainted, and he could see again. Amazing story. So another interesting story, several interesting stories about Ramanujacharya, that one time he had an argument with 1,000 Jains, and the Jains were defeated, of course, and they committed suicide because they didn't want to surrender. It's interesting. Then, here's a story about renunciation. There's a story of a devotee named Dhanur Das. Dhanur Das was very attracted to his girlfriend. Even in India, they had girlfriends. That's only unusual. Krishna had girlfriends. So he was very attracted. In fact, he was so attracted to his girlfriend that when he went for a walk with her, he walked backwards so he could hold an umbrella over her head and fan her at the same time. Wouldn't that be nice to have your husband do that to you? You know, just hold an umbrella and fan you with a sombrero.
While shopping.
While shopping. Wouldn't that be nice? So he was doing that. And while he was doing that, Ramanujacharya's disciples saw that, and then they started laughing. You know, some brahmacharis do that. They said, look at that guy, he's crazy. And Ramanujacharya said to the brahmacharis, no, let me talk to him. He called him over. He said, why are you doing this? And he said, because she has beautiful eyes. He couldn't keep his eyes off her eyes. And so Ramanujacharya said, okay, instead of telling him he's in Maya, this is actually interesting preaching too, instead of saying, that's nonsense. The body is just stool, mucus, and urine. Instead of saying that, he said, I will show you someone with more beautiful eyes. And Dandradas was thinking, wow, where's that girl? And Ramanujacharya was saying, come with me tonight. And Dandradas shows up and he's brought into the temple to see the deity, and he looks at the deity, and this is of course Srirangam. He looks at the deity and goes, wow. And then Ramanujacharya says, okay, but you're getting married to your girlfriend now. And don't tell her her eyes are not beautiful. That will not be productive. So he gets married to his girlfriend, and you know, they have nice marriage. They're both initiated by Ramanujacharya, and they're both good devotees. They're both very renounced, ideal couple. And Ramanujacharya, he spends a lot of time with them. He's very affectionate towards them, and so his brahmacharis are really getting upset. You know, come on, these are just like attached householders. Why are you spending time with them? And Ramanujacharya understands, you know, what the brahmacharis are talking behind the back, you know, like people, Guru Maharaj is spending so much time with this couple. We're brahmacharis, we're renounced, we're sannyasis. We're the real devotees. They're thinking like that. And so what happens is Ramanujacharya said, okay, I'm going to teach you a lesson. So, one night, while all the sannyasis and brahmacharis are sleeping, he exchanges their clothes. You know, they have the clothes next to them, exchanges them or something like that. And they wake up in the morning and can't find their clothes. And they start to get angry and they start to yell and scream at each other. And Ramanujacharya says, look, you know, how attached you are. So, I'll show you how detached this Dandradas and his wife are. So he instructs some of his brahmacharis to go there and steal her jewelry from her, actually, the jewelry she's wearing, because she has a lot of jewelry. So they sneak over there and go in the house, and she's sleeping, and they start to pull the jewelry off of her. At least that's how the story goes. And she knows what's going on, but she wants them to take the jewelry. So she actually turns over the other way so they could take the jewelry from the opposite side of the body. And the brahmacharis get scared and they run away. They say, oh, and they run back. And then Ramanujacharya says to the brahmacharis, because he's talking to Dandradas at the same time, so he's not home with his wife. So he says to the brahmacharis, all right, you go and watch to see what happens when Dandradas gets home. So Dandradas returns home and sees his wife. You know, half the body has no jewelry. He says, what happened, dear? And she says, the brahmacharis came and they took my jewelry, and I turned over so they could take the jewelry from the other side of my body. And Dandradas chastises his wife. He says, that's nonsense. You should have just given them the jewelry like that. And the brahmacharis, looking at that, understand who is actually renounced. That's who is actually renounced. This is very, that's a very important story in Ramanujacharya's pastimes. And then, two more things. While Ramanujacharya was in Navadvip, because he visited Navadvip, he actually got a vision of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is from the Navadvip Dhamma Mahatmya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He got a vision of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya told him only to preach dasha ras, that means servitude relationship with Krishna, and not a conjugal ras or parental ras or any of these other rasas. Only dasha ras. And Lord Chaitanya said, that way I will bring forward these other rasas or taste relationships later on when I appear. So, and he told Ramanujacharya that Ramanujacharya would later appear in his pastimes as a devotee in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And there's a devotee named Ananta Acharya who was the appearance of Ramanujacharya in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So Ramanujacharya appeared during Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So when Ramanujacharya got ready to leave this world, he told his disciples that they would, that it was time to leave, and they begged him, please, Guru Maharaj, stay longer. And he wasn't really sick, he just decided to leave. It was the time to end his pastimes. So they got three more days, and Ramanujacharya gave them four instructions before he left. He said, these are my essential instructions. And the first one was, you should serve, always serve the Vaishnavas. Imagine that, Vaishnava Seva. Which is actually really important. Like, it's equivalent to Lord Chaitanya's Jivadoy, right? Like Lord Chaitanya's main thing, Jivadoy Namaruchi. Right? You remember that? Namaruchi, taste for the holy name. And what's that? Namaruchi. Vaishnava Seva and Namaruchi. So, remember this. So, serve the Vaishnavas too, have faith in the Vedas and devotees, conquer lust, anger, and greed, and worship Narayan. These are the four instructions he gave them. And then he put his head, actually before he left, he had this deity of himself made. He says, when I go, this will be my very self. And he actually breathed onto the deity to install the deity of himself. And that deity is actually in the same place where Ramanujacharya's body is, in Sri Ranga, right before the body, right in front of the body. And then he instructed them to follow these details. And he put his head on Govinda, his disciples, that is his cousin actually, his cousin's lap, and he left his body in Sri Ranga. And that's the story of Ramanujacharya. Does anyone have any questions about Ramanujacharya, his philosophy, or his pastimes? Yes?
How far before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance with Ramanujacharya?
This was about 700 years before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Pretty long before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, any other questions? Yes.
Is there any specific pastime between Lord Chaitanya and Ananta Acharya?
I don't remember right now any of those specific pastimes. But he definitely was part of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So any other questions or any questions? No? Rasa Bihari?
When Ramanujacharya went to Tirupati, he went on his knees.
He went on his knees, yes.
But that means we should go on knees?
Well, I'll explain why he did that. He actually went to Tirumala. Right. So you have these two places, Tirupati and Tirumala. Tirupati is the city below the hill, the Tirumala Hills. The Tirumala Hills are considered somewhat like, I guess it's like Govardhan that Govardhan is Krishna, not different from Krishna. So the Tirumala Hills are considered like the spines of Lord Vishnu. You know, the different chakras or spines on Lord Vishnu's spine. And so in the Tirumala Hills, you have Balaji is installed. And so, because the Tirumala Hills are considered to be non-different than Lord Vishnu's spine and Lord Vishnu, devotees don't like, some devotees, actually reverent devotees, don't want to put their feet on the hill, just like we don't want to put our feet on Govardhan. We should not walk on Govardhan. I remember, actually, sometimes when I've gotten shilas for devotees, I've climbed on Govardhan with my knees. It's interesting, isn't it? So I did the same thing. So Ramanujacharya, when he wanted to see Balaji in Tirumala, that's on the hill, he tied his ankle to his thigh and he walked up the hill on his knees. And also, when he went there, he did not eat or didn't want to pass stool or urine or any bodily function up there, because he was very respectful considering the hill to be non-different than Lord Vishnu. So that's it. His attitude is one of awe and reverence in relationship to Lord. Even today, if you go to Tirumala, if you go up to the steps going up to Tirumala, which is, it's a long trip. It takes about, most people, it takes 3.5 hours to go up there. It took me 2.5. Pretty good. You'll find some devotees actually climbing up the hill on their knees to see Balaji. It's quite difficult. I mean, because of the steps, some of the steps, quite a distance between one step and another, and it's, some of them are pretty steep, like that going up the hill. It's a quite difficult climb. So he was very respectful like that to the deities. So, any other question? No, everybody's so quiet. Yes.
You mentioned that the brahmanas, they take the demons, they take us in Brahma's family.
Some.
So.
Not that everybody.
They have the power that they can choose which family that they are born into.
Mm-hmm. These demons are very powerful personalities. You know, they, because they're running away from the demigods, so they have to take shelter in different ways. Sometimes there's one story in the Mahabharata that they took shelter under the ocean one time. And the demigods couldn't go near them when they were under the ocean because Agni has a problem with water. Yeah, isn't it? And so Agastya Muni, he was called, and what did he do? He drank up all the ocean. And the demons were attacked at that particular point. Then the ocean was later filled with the Ganges water. So the demons, yeah, they have power. They can appear in different families. You know, just, there's many stories of demons appearing in devotee families, even. Isn't it? Yeah, and many stories of devotees appearing in demon families. Not, what's that?
Especially in Kali Yuga, the Rakshas are coming in the Brahman family.
Yeah.
Kali Masrita, Brahma Jonisho Jai.
But it's not that, I'm not stating that everybody who's in a Brahman family is a demon. That's really not the point. You know, I have to be careful about that. But many Brahmins are just interested in money or perverting religious principles. So we have to be very, very careful. But actually, a Brahman is one, according to the Vedic literatures, means the one who knows Brahman. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagwaniti, Shavyate. Who knows, at least the impersonalist or Paramatma, Brahman, or what to speak of someone who knows Bhagawan. So that's what a Brahman is. That's a definition of a Brahman. But you find people born in Brahman families, or priestly families in the Western world, who are actually demoniac sometimes. Really demoniac. I mean, Ravana had a Brahmin father, right? Mother was a little challenged. We talked about that yesterday. Kekasi. But the father was great. The father was the father of Kuvera. Vishravas, you know, wow, what a nice father. Isn't it? And then you have that story, actually it's interesting, even the story of King Vena. His father was a really nice guy. His mother was also a little challenged. She was the daughter of fear personified. This is a Bhagavatam story. And Vena was born, and he was so bad that when he went to play with his friends, he would kill them all. And his mother would ask him, what happened with your friends, my dear little boy? And he said, I killed them. And eventually his father looked at his son, King Anga, he looked at his son, and he said, he's a really bad son. And then he thought, but he's a good son. Because he gives me an excuse to get out of here, you know. So it's an interesting story. That's a story from the Bhagavatam. The story of King Vena. And King Vena was also another entity whose body was churned to get a good king. That's Prithu and Archie. An incarnation of the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord's consort, Lakshmi, who came from that churning. So even if they churned the body and genetically engineered everything, and you got a husband and his wife who came from there. Didn't even have to look for his wife. You know. I mean, they were quite expert. I mean, like how Draupadi was born, Drishtadyumna was born. If you read the Mahabharata, you'll see that practically no one had a regular birth. Isn't it? Everybody's birth was like highly unusual. Even Grandfather Bhishma, I mean, he was probably the most normal birth in the whole Mahabharata. But his mother was killing, Nangadevi was killing all of his brothers before he was born. So that's Grandfather Bhishma. I mean, if you look how Duryodhana was born in an artificial womb along with his brothers, and what to speak of, Dronacharya, who was born from a pot, right, Drona, and Kripacharya, Kripa, Kripi, they were found on some grass, Kripacharya and Kripi, that is sister, who married Dronacharya. Anyway, you got a lot of unusual births in the Mahabharata. The Pandavas. The Pandavas, yeah, Pandavas. Practically nobody was born in the normal way. I mean, I guess Dhritarashtra was born, I mean, half normal. You know, you had Vyasadeva, you know, it was just a normal conception type of thing. But in most cases, I mean, a lot of cases in the Mahabharata, you had all these amazing types of birth. So people had technology in those days. They didn't need machines to do that. They had mantras, they had different procedures by which they could invoke some of the potencies of the universe to do things that were amazing. Nowadays, people can't do that anymore. So they need machines to make dentures. In the old days, you just say a mantra and the teeth would grow back. You'd be out of business. If I taught everybody that mantra, you wouldn't have anything to do anymore. So, any other questions?
Just on the level of compassion, like he had, Ramanuja had so much compassion.
Ramanuja, yeah.
Yes, and but for his wife, he let her go.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Well, his wife had, she had her family to take care of, and she actually was offensive. She committed so many, I'm not saying that someone commits offenses, you reject them or anything like that. But she was offensive to the Supreme Lord.
So it's important to create those boundaries to protect yourself?
Wait a second, I've got to be careful. I don't want to bring it to the modern day. No, I mean, these are special pastimes. I don't want you to draw any conclusions. People to draw any conclusions in their own lives, because it could be quite dangerous. We are actually followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We have so much patience with someone else that we don't reject anybody. We're followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even we find Shivananda Sen taking care of a dog. So there's no question of rejection because someone doesn't do or say or agree with us. We are not part of the Sri Sampradaya. We're followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so we're tolerant. The only thing we don't tolerate is if there's abuse. You know, we're not saying that someone has to be the focus of abuse or the object of abuse. But for philosophical reasons, we don't reject anybody. That's really important. And thank you for bringing that up, because I can see how that particular story could be taken out of context and people would apply it and it would be disastrous in our social scene on this earth. You know, so once, like, you know, Prabhupada, here's an example. Prabhupada had a sister. Her name was Pishma, which means sister. Anyway, older mother in Bengali. So, and she looked like Prabhupada, actually. If anyone ever met her, I did. She looked exactly like Prabhupada as a female. And so, she was married to a guy who was a drunkard, a meat eater, and, you know, do all sorts of things like that. She stayed with him, and eventually he became a great devotee. And so, that's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. They were unbelievably tolerant. And we're... The point is, with personalities like Ramanujacharya, we're supposed to follow in their footsteps, not imitate them. There's a difference. Anusar anukar. We don't imitate these great personalities, what they did. We serve them. And we remain stable in our social situation. As stated in the Bhagavatam by Lord Brahma, stane stita shruti gatam tan van manobir. Whatever situation you're in, you stay. And we don't imitate Mahajaniyena Gatasavanta. We follow in the footsteps of the great devotees, but we don't imitate them. It's like imitating Lord Shiva, who drank an ocean of poison. He could do that. You know, the churning of the milk ocean, and there was the poison. And he drank it. His throat turned blue. But he didn't die. Obviously, Lord Shiva's not going to die. So we don't imitate Lord Shiva. We don't imitate Krishna when he dances the rasa dance. It's not that some of you should decide to dance a rasa dance. Of course, most of the men don't know how to dance anyway, so that's not really a problem. Funny thing is, before I joined the movement, my mother sent me to dance school to learn how to dance, and I got kicked out of it because I stepped on all the girls' toes. So we don't have to worry, we're not expert dancers. Hare Krishna. So, we don't imitate great personalities. We have our dharma, and we stick to our dharma. This is really important. And thank you for bringing up that point, because I can see how people can misinterpret some of the things that happened with Ramanujacharya. But we're not Ramanujacharya. I'm not Ramanujacharya. You're not Ramanujacharya. We're just regular jiva souls in Kali Yuga trying to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna's pleased, stanishta, Shruti Gatam Tan Van Manobir, if we remain in our situation and engage in hearing and chanting. And if you engage in hearing and chanting, then whatever situation you're in, it doesn't matter. Because you can chant any situation. And it takes you away from this material. You become aloof from everything in this material world when you chant and hear about Krishna. So, okay?
So we can't apply that level of...
No! If you are Ramanujacharya, yes.
No.
But you are not. You know, you don't imitate these great personalities. Just stay where we all stay where we are, and we engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna. Yes, yeah. Thank God you brought that up. You have a lot of people just like getting notes from their mother-in-laws, their wives. No, people should stay with their families, because also in Kali Yuga, the preferable stage is that people stay with their families and reach out to others utilizing their family situation. Not, sannyasa is not recommended in Kali Yuga. It's one of the things that's prohibited except for extreme circumstances like mine. So, except for extreme circumstances, sannyasa is prohibited. And even we've seen in India and in ISKCON that so many sannyasis have created troubles in this world. Isn't it? Have deviated from their sannyas principles. Because it's Kali Yuga. So people should remain where they are and not leave their homes. And if their wife or husband is a little inimical, that's all right. You take that as an impetus to chant more. You know, if a devotee is in a challenging situation, you take that as an impetus to take more shelter of Krishna. Because without difficulty, what is the impetus to be Krishna conscious? Right? So, don't be careful. No, don't be a sannyasi. You have a good husband. Stick with him. Stick with him, he's good. You don't renounce anybody. You know, and we're kind.
Is that your order, Maharaj?
Yeah, that's my order. My order. And be kind to everyone. I mean, it's not that everyone will agree with us. We just have to... We have to be seen by others as perfect ladies and gentlemen. Dira dira jana priyo priyakaro. Like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were dear to the ruffians, as Prabhupada said, and the gentlemen. In other words, you have to be kind and loved and love everyone. That's your challenge. Look at Prahlad Maharaj. He was living with his father. He didn't even run away from home. I wouldn't run away from home. If I had a father like that, I'd tell you, ooh. I don't recommend one stay in the home like that, but anyway. But he stayed with Hiranyakashipu, and he loved his father. He loved him so much that he asked Lord Nrisimhadeva to please liberate him from his sins. So, you know, you hear these stories about the sannyasis and everything like that. That's stories enough for all of us. Right? Be sane. Not insane. Like Lord Chaitanya even advised Raghunath Das, who later on became Raghunath Das Goswami, don't act like a crazy man. You know, if you love Krishna, act like someone who is basically having an affair with Krishna. And don't give anyone reason to suspect that you're with Krishna. Yeah, because you have to be practical. All right, any other interesting questions? Yes.
Practice up. we hear that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world to introduce the chanting of the holy name, but we also read that when he was being born, everyone was taking a bath in the Ganges because it was an eclipse, and everyone was, the whole world was chanting Hare Krishna. So why were they chanting Hare Krishna?
Because the chanting was going on, that's eternal. He came to introduce the chanting as the Yuga Dharma, but the chanting was already going on. I mean, the chanting, it's there in the Upanishads, the formation of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. I mean, Narada Muni generally would chant about Narayan, not the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You know, sometimes you find devotees doing plays where Narada Muni is chanting Hare Krishna, but generally he was chanting Narayan, 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 like that. But he was aware of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And in the spiritual world, the Hare Krishna Mantra is being chanted continually. And throughout the ages, people have been chanting Hare Krishna. 16 words of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to establish that as the Yuga Dharma. Not to just start the Hare Krishna Mantra chanting in the world. It was already going on. But people were taking it, in Bengal they were taking it in a very ritualistic way. They didn't have the proper philosophical understanding of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Okay, everyone's so quiet here. So if there's no other questions, I guess it's time for prashanam. Thank you all. I don't have my watch with me. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Wow, it's 8:27 already. What?
A meeting.
Meeting with Krishna. I have GBC. Well, not right now. It's only 8:20. Okay, thank you all for coming. Tomorrow night we have a bigger program.
Hare Krishna, everybody. Thank you for coming tonight. Thanks from Hanuman Manda, Jaki. Thank you, Guruji, Guru Maharaj. And tomorrow night we have a program at 163 Ridley.